He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning for this week's show of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. We're in midsummer at the moment, I guess. It's hot, so the air conditioners in cars, I hope, are all working well. I have one that isn't working, and I have it at a service place, and I hope it's being fixed. Because, boy, when it's 92 outside and you open the windows to try to get fresh air, you get fresh 92-degree air inside as well, although the breeze is much appreciated with the fact that you can open your windows and get quite a good draft going through the cars or vehicle. a number of things are on our list this morning. I'll start out with something that Jay brought to my attention before we started this show. And it's sort of very, very interesting. I have sort of thought that Toyota was on top of everything, but there's a headline. The Honda, with its CR-V, has dethroned the F-150 and the RAV4 for the top spot in sales, apparently. Jay, you will carry on.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I guess people are paying attention. And the Honda, the new Honda CR-V, the latest version that came out, I think, a year, maybe 2 years ago.
You've driven it.
I drive it on a regular basis, and I drove it again over the weekend. And interestingly, I had spent a few hours before that driving pretty much top of the line Range Rover. So I went from a Range Rover to a Honda CR-V.
Big drop for you.
It wasn't. That's the whole point. Okay. It wasn't a big drop. The CR-V is well finished. It's comfortable. The hybrid version, the highest level of trim, the sport version, which is a two electric motors and a 2 liter gasoline engine with a total output of around 200 horsepower, is interesting. And we've talked about it before. It is interesting in the fact that there's no direct link between the engine and the
electric motor.
The wheels. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, to keep things simple, and they're not, the engine is basically a generator. And there's a small battery, and there are two electric motors, one on the front end, one on the rear end. And the driving of that car is just seamless. It is as smooth as an electric vehicle, and it is smoother than most CVT transmissions I've driven. Also, it's mostly very quiet. Mostly the engine doesn't really run very high RPMs, and you really have very little control over that. So if you're going up a steep hill, like here locally, if you go up Smith Hill, even if you're keeping a constant speed, not going very fast, the engine will all of a sudden start revving very high. And then it revs maybe at 5,000 or 6,000 RPMs for a certain period of time, the time you go up the hill. And it's a little disconcerting the first time it happens to you, but it actually works. Again, the car is very, very comfortable. It's seamless in its operation.
Jay, that I presume is because it's the transmission is a CVT transmission.
It's not a CVT. There is no transmission. That's the whole point. There are two electric motors driving the wheels directly. The engine powers.
When the gasoline motor comes on, you say it's revving very high.
Well, it's revving because
it's very high would be if it was connected.
No, that's the whole point. You're not getting it. It's actually charging the battery that is providing the juice to the two electric motors. So as the motors need more electricity to get powered, the engine generates more electricity.
But you don't really hear it, you said. It's quiet.
Most of the time, you don't hear that engine.
Okay.
So anyway, it's the car is comfortable. It does everything well. And just this morning, I watched on Motor Trend TV, I just watched a comparison between it, the CR-V, and the new Toyota RAV4, which we had seen at the auto show back in April. And journalists testing the two cars quickly came to the same conclusion I had when we were at the auto show, was that the interior of the RAV4 felt very plasticky and just
Not as
not
put
as
together
rich
as
in its
Honda.
finish as a CR-V.
Right.
So anyway, the CR-V came ahead in that comparison test, and I can see why. I mean, I've never driven the RAV4 yet, and it's a good vehicle. Don't get me wrong. This journalist was praising the RAV4 for a number of things. It has a lot of power. It's well built. It's also a hybrid powertrain, but it just did not match up, in her opinion, to the CR-V. So.
Very interesting. Good to know.
So that's my little
Understand no bias. I
drive of
see.
the week and opinion on cars I drive or get to drive from time to time.
Okay.
What do you have? What's
Well,
new in your world?
just to close out the Honda topic on the CR-V, it's interesting that the buyers are getting the word because. According to an article that I'm looking at right now, the sales of the CR-V surged 19% in May and 30% in June to mid-year totals of 236,114 units. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good
Yes.
number. If they can produce them that fast, great.
And I think a lot has to do also these small SUVs. I mean, and to get ahead of something you're going to jump on, or might jump on, the size of these vehicles keeps growing, right? So the
Correct.
CR-V 20 years ago, when did it come out? Like in early
Half the size
2000?
of what the current one is what they look like physically.
Yes, and a current CR-V is still categorized as a compact SUV, not a mini, not a subcompact, but a compact SUV. But all
Well,
those compact SUVs, whether the CR-V, the RAV4, the CX-5 from Mazda, all have become bigger, wider, more comfortable, and basically, going from a midsize, if you went from a mid-size SUV from 10 years ago to a Honda CR-V or RAV4 CX-5, there is no downgrade in comfort or performance.
right.
So I think it just encompasses a broader segment of the market.
So between the Range Rover and the Honda CR-V, which you were comparing at the start, you picked the Honda CR-V as being a far more practical vehicle
I
for
didn't quite
comfort.
say that.
Well,
I still have a soft spot for the Range Rover.
yes, but what is the price differential?
I just said it was not a it did not
I
feel like a
understand that.
downgrade.
But still, for just for comparative purposes, I don't know what a CRV is retailing at, but it's got to be $10,000 or $15,000 or more or less
So
than a Range Rover equivalent.
the top of the line CR-V I think is selling listing at $47,000, which is very close or even below that average price that you were going to talk about. So I'm going to let you start that conversation about price of new cars.
Okay. Well, I'll merge right into that because I'm reading the headline. It says that data shows vehicles selling faster despite a new average high, according to this article, and you're going to comment on what that means, of 50, just under $52,000 of the sales price for the average sales price for current new car purchases going on as of August of this year. We were, what was it, 5 years ago, we were in the 30 to 40,000 range, I think. And then we recently have been talking about, I don't know what the exact figure was, but it was somewhere between 40 and $45,000, I thought. Anyways, whatever it was with a four in front of it, it's now a five in front of it. Who can buy those cars at that level? Go on, Jay.
I don't know.
Well, we do
What?
know the
No.
people with more higher incomes, of course, can do that, and that's what's
Well,
pushing them
but that's
up.
what.
And when you buy Lucids and Range Rovers and Audis and BMWs at sales that are continuing to go along at quite good paces, that's what's pushing the average up, while the sales of $30,000 cars may under $30,000 cars may be going along, but not numerically, they're not matching enough to keep
Right.
the
And
price down.
so here's the thing. And I'm saying this from memory because a few weeks ago I was reading articles about that. So even though the average price is going up, there's a difference between the average price and the average transaction price, right? Because cars are being discounted. So even though the average list price of cars being sold is at like $51,000, $52,000, the average transaction price is around $49,000.
Correct.
So, which means that, I guess the rough or the easy conclusion from that is that there's a like $2,000 discounts on average on cars. But there's also the fact that it does not mean that you cannot find cars under $50,000. It just means that
No.
more people are buying cars that are higher priced and therefore pulling that average north of $50,000. But there
Now
are
that
plenty of cars on the market for, $40,000 or less. And I'm just looking at my screen right now, and for instance, there's a comparison in Car and Driver, or there's an article about the best commuter cars. And if you look at a 2027 Chevy Bolt or a Honda Civic or Toyota Prius, those cars are listing in the high 20s, low 30s.
right.
So there are still plenty of cars you can buy. You can get a lot of car for,
You
$30,000.
can. Well, they've been increasingly making the interiors of the less expensive models have more of the some of the features of the more expensive models in terms of materials and seats and maybe materials and dashboards, although Toyota seems to be a bit behind the Honda CR-V and with their RAV4
So
interior,
I
as
want.
you have not noted. But when a reviewer calls an interior plasticky at the same price level as a Honda CR-V, which apparently does not have that feel to it, that to some people is a notable reason to let the RAV4 go by the wayside in their choice between the two vehicles.
Well, just to be clear, plasticky was a term that I used.
Well, I
I think
know, but
she
it is
was
a good
more
term.
eloquent about the description of it. But
It's a good term.
speaking of plasticky, and I want to jump to another low price vehicle that we've talked about, and we come back to it from time to time, which we haven't seen on the roads yet, and it's going to be a while longer, is the Slate electric
Pick
truck,
up, yes.
the electric the pickup truck and or SUV. You can turn it into a small SUV. I guess a few weeks ago we had read about the first rides that journalists were given in them. At this point, journalists have been given the opportunity to drive them, and after their first ride in them, journalists were like, maybe not so great. Now that they've driven it, the consensus seems to be, from the few articles I've read, that they are a pretty cool little vehicle, and that now we're talking about price
Well,
range well under $30,000 as a
correct.
base price.
But we don't know what the price level of the ones they drove were. Jay Leno, I think, has been able to drive one. but back to that, Ford's coming out with this super low price, I guess you could say, new electric, not a pickup truck that's supposed to be $30,000 or less with for the basic price of it. And I forget what the name is, Jay. If you can come up with it, it's not anything we ever thought it would come up with.
Fathom.
What is it?
Fathom.
Fathom. The Fathom. And I don't know, I suppose you don't equate a Fathom, a potential Fathom, to a Slate pickup truck. But they're both pickup truck, designs. And for the Fathom, if it really does hit at 30,000 and you can actually find one at 30,000 or less, is it going to be so much more vehicle for that same amount of money than the an upgraded version of the Slate? We know the Slate was going to come in at 20 when it, 5 years or 4 years ago when they first told about it. Now I think it's closer to 30,000 before. I don't know what they had in the ones that they were test driving. Did they have crank up windows or did they have AC? Did they, all that's probably going to be in the Fathom.
crank windows. It does have AC. Does not have an infotainment system. No
Right.
radio. It's like bring your own phone and connect
Well,
it,
you know,
and that's
people
it.
who are driving around in the right-hand drive Suzuki pickup trucks will be people who might like the slates. And
I know. I have a friend who has one of those little trucklets,
yep, truckless, a good word for it.
and he's actually looking at purchasing a used Honda Fit, and I was just thinking about that this morning. Maybe he should just like pre-order a slate, and he could kill two birds with one stone.
yourself. But I'd
But
like to just jump briefly before we go on with your topics. As we've been talking about, vehicle pricing climbs to record high levels. That's happening in the loan department as loans are growing longer and longer and are stretching out to 80 as long as 84 months. The data I have in front of me says that 24% of people choosing to finance their vehicles are choosing 84 month terms or longer. I don't know what that means, 96, 108, but it's astounding to think that you'd want to, and maybe they just have to. You'd want to, I don't know the what economics of borrowing on a car for 84 months, even if you don't plan on trading it in or don't want to trade it in. But if you want to trade it in, go on, Jay. You've got some comments
I
about
don't know. I'm trying to do
that.
math. I don't even know how many years that is.
84 months is eight, nine,
No.
eight, 7 years, you think.
Yes, it is 7 years.
7 years.
Back to basics, arithmetic.
Right.
7 years. I mean, look at the age of the cars you have, and tell me
Yeah.
that at 7 years your car is not still a functional
It is. It is.
piece
I've
of
got a
equipment.
2014 Jeep Cherokee, right? 135,000 miles and running like a top. I don't have any loan on it. I did have a loan of 4 years, and I thought that was long when I purchased that car back in 2014. I
My
couldn't wait to pay it off.
point is, I'm not afraid of 7 year loans on cars.
Not for functionality. Absolutely
They
not.
the cars are so much better quality than they ever were.
Correct.
I guess, and we discussed this very briefly, and we've talked about this before, but if you're getting into a 7 year loan, as long as you don't plan on flipping the car or trading it in the first year or two, you should be fine. So there's this whole thing about being underwater, the number of people who are underwater on their loans. Even that is not data that worries me, because yes, if you take out a 5, 6, or 7 year loan on the car, on most cars, you may be underwater in the first year or two or maybe three, but you should not be underwater after that. We all know that, the way loans function, you're paying back an equal amount of money every month, but initially you're paying a lot more interest, and then you're not bringing
You're
down
not bringing the price down, yeah.
the principal down. And at the same time, that is the time where the car depreciates the most. So it makes a lot of sense that you would be underwater on any car loan in the first, let's say, 2 years. I mean, that to me, you can do a lot of data research, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And it's not should not be worrisome. So you get a 5 or 6 or even a 7 year loan, and 3 years down the road you want to sell the car or trade it in, you should be able to
Break
come
even.
out ahead, if the car is well maintained, in good condition, and has a reasonable resale value.
And a reasonable low level of mileage.
Well, that too. So that doesn't, those long car loans don't really worry me per se. On the other hand, not having a car loan is probably the smartest thing.
Very pleasant, I must admit.
Yeah.
I just think that the other issue is what is the value of the car once you've gotten 5 years and over 100,000 miles on if you drive 20,000 miles a year,
Well,
which some people don't. But the Kelley Blue Book is stated by some car warranty, used car warranty plans as the plan by which they go by in estimating the value of the vehicle if you come up with a large cost repair. And that happened to me on my 14 Jeep when I thought that I had a transmission that might be failing, to find out that Kelley Blue Book told the warranty company that I have the warranty under that my Jeep was only worth between $1,500 and $2,200 a year. I mean, for the vehicle at this level of age and mileage, and they would not grant me a complete cost
So,
recovery on a any repair that cost more than what the value of the car was at the time I needed this repair.
we never
That
discussed that. What is
is something that everybody who's listening and wants to get solicited by these car repair warranty programs, which are all over the radio, the TV, and the internet, and maybe your phone or your phone at home. I get calls from them because they seem to know when my car has reached it's passed by its normal warranty that it comes with, and they want to sell you something at $300 a month for 4 years or 5 years, do the math or more, and they claim that they're going to repair your car up to 20 years old.
See, your problem is you take all those spam calls. I don't.
Well, I wanted to find out what they were all about.
So
And
what happened with your Jeep? What's the status? Did you get it
well, the
fixed?
status was that the so-called transmission repair I thought might be ne or replacement that might be needed, and that the dealer said we don't repair these transmissions because they're not worth anything. A new one was going to cost me $10,000 if I needed it. They agreed that there was something wrong. They could not find the problem. They couldn't find a way to program it. It was lurching and bucking in its shifts.
Yeah, what is it
But
doing
I've
now?
worked it out. I don't know. All the things that made me take it in have seamlessly, seemingly disappeared. We'll see what happens in the wintertime because the problem really showed itself in the cold weather when you started the car up in its shifts. And of course, it's a 9-speed transmission, not a CVT. So the shifts are notable.
All right, well, keep us posted when
We
you get
will.
into
We'll keep this
okay.
updated. Right now, it's running beautifully, and I have no plans to sell it to anybody, but I wouldn't sell it to anybody for $2,500. Therefore, I'm probably going to
Nobody's going to
be.
buy it if it has transmission issues.
Well, it doesn't right now. I
Oh, okay.
honestly say it
That.
doesn't have transmission issues.
Okay. I want to shift into to something that happened
Good.
here in Lakeville
Oh, yes, please do.
last week. So there is a crosswalk at the bottom near the gas
It's a
station
closed
here
off.
in Lakeville, and I happened to be not far away and witnessed a dump truck plowing into a pickup truck that had come to an abrupt stop for the
The
blinking light
crosswalk.
at the crosswalk. And, when I saw the scene from a little distance, like a couple hundred feet, and as the pickup truck came to a stop at the crosswalk when the lights went on, the dump truck was still accelerating, and only at the last second and too late did the dump truck driver see the pickup truck stopping and just plowed right into the rear of it and veered a little bit to the right. The
Got to miss it.
pedestrians who were crossing the road were on the other side of the road, or else they would have been mowed over. And that's a
Is it
good
the
thing.
vehicle that was stopped yet pushed across the crosswalk?
The vehicle that was stopped, the pickup truck, and it was a Toyota, so it was a mid-sized pickup truck, was pushed right through the crosswalk, and the dump truck was well past
Lights.
the well, yes, and the crosswalk. So, first things first, okay, nobody's hurt. That's a good thing. The driver in the pickup truck did get a little whiplash, not surprisingly.
Yeah. Let's talk about the like, crosswalk itself part, the operation of it. I am very aware that people aren't pushing the buttons also. Let's go to the
So
whole crosswalk topic briefly, and I'll let you get back.
no no
Because
so here's
I've been watching for these crosswalk lights to come on when I see people at the intersections. I actually suggested to a woman who was trying to cross the main street in Lakeville the other day, about 75 feet away from the crosswalk, and she was waiting and waiting, and the traffic was coming down the hill or through the stop sign. I opened my window and I suggested to her that she walked out of the crosswalk, and she heard me, and she did not do it. But you really, at these crosswalks, you really cannot be on your cell phone or not looking at something other than the crosswalk itself when you're coming towards an area where there is a crosswalk in the road. Would you not agree? I mean, you just don't know. Some people don't push the lights and they think they're going to walk across without being in
So
danger.
here's the thing. Okay, so in this particular case, in the crash that I witnessed, the dump truck driver is clearly responsible. There was no question. He admittedly he tried to explain that he looked at the people, they hesitated, they walked back. He thought that the pickup truck was going through the crosswalk, and the pickup truck did slam on its brake to come to a
Oh, of
stop.
course it did.
So here's the moral of the story. So if you are pushing on those lights like you're supposed to do to cross the street, if you're doing that at a time when the vehicles approaching the crosswalk are not going to be able to stop, and
If you
there's a
can judge that.
you can't expect people to stop on a dime. So my recommendation, and this is all common sense and courtesy every which way around, is that if you come to a crosswalk and the car is approaching and is very close, wait till they go by to push on the button. Of course, if there's a if there's traffic going both ways and traffic is constant, yeah, at some point push on the buttons and hope that people see it and come to a stop. It's a little like there's a time period, like a yellow light when you get to
Yes.
a light. The yellow light is that time when you cannot reasonably be expected to come to a stop. Same thing, there is no yellow light with a crosswalk, right? It is the yellow light. So I think, we all have to be reasonable. We all, if you're approaching a crosswalk, you should have your eyes peeled. Even if the lights are not on, I'm always looking to see if there's a pedestrian getting ready to cross the road or not. And if
Eyes
there
on the
is,
road and
you have
eyes
to
on the
expect the
crosswalk.
lights to go on.
Eyes on the road and eyes on the crosswalk. The most dangerous of the three crosswalks we have going is the one in Salisbury because parking is allowed on both sides of the road, almost right up to the crosswalk. And that means cars are hiding pedestrian crossing people at some level. And especially in my opinion, on the westbound lane in Salisbury. And especially if there's a van parked there, you're not going to see a person that's waiting to cross in a crosswalk if a van is parked right in front of the crosswalk crossing area. And that is when people should really have make sure that they push that light. And my sister was a victim of my criticism not recently, some time ago, because I observed her going across and she never did push the crosswalk sign. And I had some words with her about it, and since then I think she's doing it. But
So
to our
the moral of the
listeners, if you're
story,
using a crosswalk, push
the
that
moral.
button no matter if you think nobody's coming or there are nobody's no vehicles are coming or not. You should push it just to because those blinking lights might flash in somebody's oncoming eyes, and they might have been on their phone and they might be able to slow down and stop for you.
The moral of the story is if you're the pedestrian, don't ex and you may have the right of way. You keep your eyes peeled, push on the buttons, wait, and make sure that traffic is in fact going to stop in front of
Correct.
the crosswalk.
Okay, Jay, good. Go on to your other topics.
I
Oh,
think
I'll
we're running out of time
take a
for
topic.
or
Let me take a topic titled A Touchy Subject. There's been a lot of noise for me on this show about how much I do not like touch screens to access all the menus that the older cars made it very easy to do, which included push buttons and knobs. And there's an article in a recent edition of Automotive News that acknowledges that there's been a lot of consumer pushback, loudly started not by me, but continued by me about not having push buttons. And Subaru and I think a couple of other cars, either Kia or Hyundai, have got more touch buttons controls in their front dashboard control systems along with the touchscreen. And we may see the return to more of vehicles with touch touch buttons for heated seats, front and rear, environment controls, max AC, things like we used to be able to look at, or not even look at, but find with our fingers and touch without taking our eyes off the road. Right, so, now, touchscreens, yeah, you're driving new cars with touchscreen. You so can do anything, you have to look at them to make a change.
So do Honda and Porsche still have buttons and do a very good job at combining the screens with physical buttons.
Good. And until next week, when we may continue on some of this, we are Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.